Welcome to Fraternal Files. I'm Shelby.
And I'm Kersey.
We are fraternal twins talking true crime.
I was almost the topic of today's episode.
Oh my gosh, she was smacking these chicken wings and this noise that was, I could have killed her.
They're gone now.
I could have killed her. She's still alive. The wings are gone.
So we're going to talk about someone else.
So instead, we are going to talk about Aaron Hernandez.
I don't, like, really know anything about this, but some of the names sound familiar to me.
Yes, Aaron Hernandez was a football player for the New England Patriots, and he did some crappy stuff.
Did he? Tell me about it.
All right, so I'm going to start with his childhood. Aaron was born on November 6, 1689, to Dennis and Terry Hernandez.
1689?
He was born November 6th of 1989 to Dennis and Terry Hernandez. Dennis's father was a star football player in his high school in their town of Bristol, Connecticut. And that is the same high school that Aaron and his brother DJ went. He expected the same from them, for them to be great athletes. And he pushed them really hard. He was known as the king around town, kind of both for being a great athlete and also just kind of being like a tough guy. Everybody kind of respected him around Bristol, Connecticut. So Aaron was really brought up as an athlete. That was the expectation, like I said, for both him and his brother. And his dad pushed them really hard. And I think that's probably something that's kind of common with families who expect their kids to be athletes. But it went a little bit further than just the training. Dennis was also kind of abusive to both his children and his wife. Terry actually would throw him out and take him back often. The couple got married in 1986. They divorced in 1991 and they remarried again in 1996. I don't really know the extent of the abuse that happened to Aaron and his brother DJ, but there are reports of kind of crazy abuse to Terry, his wife. I know that I read somewhere, I didn't actually read Aaron's brother DJ's book, but I know that he wrote something in his book about how his dad like slammed his mom's head like into the kitchen sink, which is, wow.
So he wasn't kind of abusive. He was abusive.
He was abusive, especially to the wife. I don't know the extent of the abuse to the boys. So that was kind of early childhood. And going into high school, Aaron quickly became a football star who also excelled in basketball and track. He broke records and he received multiple awards throughout his high school football career. But at 16, his father went to the hospital for hernia surgery, and there were complications and he passed away. And that's something that Aaron struggled with a lot. Cause like I said, with his dad pushing him so much to be an athlete, they got really close and he had a lot of respect for his father. So losing his father, especially at 16 and especially unexpectedly, it was a pretty big deal to him. Shortly after his dad's death, his relationship with his mother really started to deteriorate, and he actually ended up moving in with his cousin, whose name is Tanya Singleton. She really quickly became like a mother figure to him because he just didn't have a good relationship with his own mom. Tanya was a very loyal person to Aaron his entire life. She would be throughout his entire football career, through all his legal battles. And she was kind of one of those women who had a home where everyone was welcome. Anyone could do what they wanted, come and go as they pleased. And while some people would think this is really great, Unfortunately, this environment attracted some people from kind of a rougher crowd. And this rougher crowd, Aaron kind of quickly fell into and started hanging out with them. He was able to smoke and he was able to drink with no consequences. And this led Aaron to do these things quite heavily. In high school is also when he started dating his future fiance, Cheyenne Jenkins. Since he was such a good athlete in high school, he was being offered scholarships to lots of different schools. Pretty much everybody wanted him. But his original plan was that he was going to go to the University of Connecticut because UConn is where his dad went and it's where his brother was going at the moment. His brother was a quarterback. So the goal was going to be Aaron's going to join DJ at UConn and they're going to play together and it's going to be awesome. But when he went on a visit to the University of Florida, Coach Urban Meyer offered him a scholarship and Aaron pretty much committed instantly. Urban Meyer, who, like I said, is the coach at the University of Florida, even convinced Aaron's high school principal to allow Aaron to graduate early so that he could come and play football sooner. This meant that he was only 17. He was fresh out of high school and he was off to college. I cannot even imagine going to college at 17. I wasn't ready to go even when I graduated. Like, I had to wait.
I'm still not ready.
Yeah, I knew I knew I wouldn't be successful. I cannot imagine doing it at 17, especially when he had just lost his father. He was just not mentally or emotionally prepared for school. Since he wasn't prepared on an educational level either, he had to take courses at a community college just to catch up, which I read is actually what a lot of players who graduated high school early did, because there were actually quite a few players like Aaron who graduated high school early so that they could come and play football. As far as football goes, Aaron had a really successful career in his first 3 years. He won a lot of rewards. He was really talented. He was voted to be, or he was considered to be, one of the best tight ends in the country. But unfortunately, a lot of those problems that he had when he was in high school, like smoking marijuana and drinking and partying, those things only followed him to college. And he started failing drug tests and he had anger. He had a lot of anger issues and a lot of decision-making skills were lacking. And this is the time when they really started to shine through. In April of 2007, as a freshman, Aaron was out at a bar with his teammate, Tim Tebow, who also went on to be an NFL star. They had a few drinks at the bar, even though Aaron was underage. And when they were finished, he refused to pay the bill.
What?
I have read two conflicting stories. One story says that the manager was like, hey, you need to pay your bill. And Aaron was like, do you know who I am? I'm not paying.
Wow.
And another story says that there was a group of people that were fans of Aaron and offered to pay his bill. And then when he left, the guys decided they no longer wanted to pay the bill. So the manager confronted him.
Was Tim Tebow of age at this point?
I have no idea how old Tim Tebow was, but Tim Tebow was very vocal about his faith and stuff like that. So I'm really kind of confused about like why Tim Tebow was even in this situation, but reportedly he was there. Anyway, when the manager confronted him about paying his bill and he refused to do that, Aaron punched him so hard in the side of the head that it ruptured his eardrum.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There was never any formal charges pressed against Aaron, and it's suspected that the Florida football team made some kind of arrangement with the manager to settle the issue outside of court. There's nothing official. Nobody has said anything. Obviously, the Florida Gators aren't going to straight out say, yeah, we bailed him out because he's a football player. But this issue only kind of solidified in Aaron's mind that because he was such a talented athlete that he wouldn't suffer consequences the same way that other people would.
Yeah.
So he was already struggling with decision-making skills, and then he pretty much got this confirmation, like, hey, I can do whatever I want, and nobody can stop me. So he continued to smoke weed, drink often, party. His temper and emotional maturity didn't seem to improve even as he grew up through the football program. And despite his talent, Urban Meyer finally decided to tell Aaron that he would not be welcome back his senior year. And that to play with the Florida Gators, and instead just encouraged him to try to get drafted into the NFL.
Wow.
So now we move on to Aaron trying to get into the NFL. Like I said, he was a really, really talented football player. But the problem is that the NFL is a big business. It's a big industry. So they do a lot of research into their players before they draft you. They'll do like maturity tests. They'll do background checks. They'll do drug tests. They have investigators. They have all kinds of hoops that players need to jump through just to like join the pool of players that are eligible to be drafted.
Wow.
And he scored the absolute lowest possible for emotional maturity in his pre-draft report.
Holy moly.
And all the teams had heard about his failing drug tests and all of his anger issues. So just based on his football talents alone, he was talented enough to be like a first or second round draft pick. He was the best. But in 2010, Aaron was drafted as a fourth round pick for the New England Patriots. The New England Patriots are kind of known sometimes for drafting people that are a little rougher on the edges if they think that they're coachable. And this is what they thought about Aaron Hernandez. They thought, well, he has all of these problems, but he's such a good player. And Coach Bill Belichick just kind of thought, we can get him where we want him to be.
So, like, when he did his test, he scored to pass, but he was, like, the lowest?
Yeah, he was, like, the lowest possible passing score. Like, they were kid has... He's just not mature enough.
He's got issues.
Yeah. So, like I said, the Patriots drafted him anyway, but they had really strict guidelines for him. And he was given a 2-year contract. And I don't know. I saw a couple conflicting articles or posts about how much he was offered to make. But I know that it was significantly less than a standard player in his position would have made. And he was only offered that 2-year contract. So kind of as a little interruption through this, NFL process, we have this car shooting that happens in 2012. He was drafted in 2010. And then kind of towards the end of his 2-year period, there's this car shooting that happens. He's at a club called The Cure with his friend Alexander Bradley. Alexander Bradley is known for selling drugs and for selling guns. He's a tough guy, and Aaron really liked to hang around him. At some point, Aaron's irrational anger issues got so bad that he kind of hired Bradley to be sort of like a bodyguard, but more like an emotional bodyguard, where like if Aaron was about to like lash out on somebody, Bradley was expected to like calm him down and get him out of the situation.
It's probably a good idea, maybe.
Right? I mean, it's a good idea to have that, but I think if you're noticing that your anger issues are so bad that you need to have somebody following you around when you go to the club to make sure you don't start
a fight. Just don't go to the clubs.
Maybe don't go to the clubs and, like, get some help.
Yeah, be an adult, dude.
Yeah, like, I don't know. It's kind of crazy to me. And so they're drinking at The Cure, and a couple of guys who are also partying there accidentally spill a drink on Aaron. Allegedly, this is the story. So later that they're leaving the club, the two men, Daniel D'Abreu and Zafiro Furtado, who are supposedly the guys that spilled drinks on Aaron, are driving, and they are... A silver SUV pulls up to them at a stoplight, yells some racial comments at them, and 5 shots are fired into the car, and both of these men were killed. There are some witnesses that say that it was Aaron Hernandez that did it, just based on the description, that it was like a tall, like it was a Hispanic guy, blah, blah, blah. Nobody ever actually named Aaron Hernandez, but they knew that Aaron Hernandez was at the club at that time. So we're going to come back to this murder later. Two guys are killed in a car, and that's all that's all we know at this moment. Aaron was never tied to it at this time. But just 1 month after this incident, the Patriots signed Aaron to a new contract worth $40 million with a $12.5 million sign-in bonus. So let's, like, think. Allegedly, he kills these two guys outside of a club for seemingly no reason. And then just 1 month later, he signs a contract for $40 million. And he's expected to be able to focus on football, which he does. And he does it fine. Because
he's crazy.
He's crazy. He was not much of a teammate off of the field. While the other players would hang out off the field, kind of like a family, Aaron would work really hard on the field. And then he would be more interested in his own personal life, doing drugs and partying. A lot of football players kind of originally wanted to take Aaron under their wing and try to get him on the right path. But nobody was really able to do that because he just didn't care about associating with him that much.
He's not a very good team player.
No, he's like a good player. He can be trusted on the field, but he's just not part of the family outside of actual football. So in February of 2013, Aaron, Alexander Bradley, and a few other people were on a trip to Florida at a strip club called Tootsie's. There were two men there that Aaron became suspicious were police officers undercover and following him from Boston. And Bradley told Aaron that if they were cops, it was probably because they were investigating the double murder from back in 2012. Later on in that trip, Bradley claims that he fell asleep in the car and he woke up to Aaron Hernandez holding a gun at his face. Can you imagine? You're just like sleeping in the car and then like you wake up and there's just big, huge...
What year was this?
This was in 2013.
Oh, okay. So this was just like a year later.
Just a year later, yep. Bradley claims that in the morning, well, he doesn't claim. In the morning, he was found having been shot in the eye by police.
What?
But the police didn't shoot him. He was found found him after he had been shot. but Bradley refused to tell the police who had shot him.
Wait, so he lived?
He lived. He was shot, like, if you see pictures of him, you can tell that he was shot in the eye. Like, he was shot, like, right around his eye. But he did live. And he refused to tell the police who had shot him. He was angry and he was wanting revenge. And he began threatening Aaron through text message, asking for money to compensate for the damage he'd done. And remember, Aaron was a gun dealer. He sold drugs. And he was perfectly capable of hurting or killing Aaron. And Aaron knew that. So Aaron had a meeting with the Patriots coach, Bill Belichick, saying that he was in fear for his life and he wanted to be traded to a team on the other side of the country, like trade him to Seattle or trade him to, you know, any team over there. But Bill Belichick didn't want to do that. Obviously he didn't want to lose such a good tight end. So he asked an employee of the team to help Aaron out. And the way that they helped Aaron out was by getting him another apartment. And you would think that if you were in this situation where you were scared for your life, at this time he had a fiance and he had a brand new daughter, like you would think that he would want to move into like an apartment with the best security and all of that. But he chose kind of just like a rundown apartment.
Dude.
Like just a random rundown apartment. And he didn't even tell his fiance about this apartment. So the Patriots helped him get this apartment.
What?
But he kept it as like a little secret place where he would just go kind of hide out. Smoke weed.
I want to hide out.
At this point, he was so scared of Alexander Bradley that he began, it was rumored that he was hoarding weapons, and he even got like an armored car with hidden compartments for guns. Now, these are all rumors. But there was even the neighbor at the apartment that he moved into. His little secret apartment said that he was like really unfriendly and he would always wear hoodies, even if it was with the hood up, even if it was super hot outside. And
so he didn't want people to know he was there.
No, he didn't want people to know he was there. He was just really sketchy about that whole apartment. So now we really get into the big issue of Aaron Hernandez. On June 16th, 2013, Aaron texts a man named Odin Lloyd. Now, Odin Lloyd is the boyfriend of his fiance's sister. So Aaron's fiance's name is Cheyenne Jenkins, and her sister was dating this man named Odin Lloyd. Odin Lloyd was a semi-pro football player in the area, and he, when people ask about him, they say that he was a really loyal family man, a great friend, a great brother, and a former teammate even said that nobody would have ever expected him to be on either end of a gun. So on June 16th, 2013, around 9 p.m., Aaron texted Odin telling him that he was going to pick him up. Along with him came Aaron's friends Otis Wallace and Carlos Ortiz. These are two friends that that Aaron knew through his aunt Tanya Singleton. So this was the rougher crowd that he started to hang out with back when he was in high school. And these guys were a lot older than him, a lot rougher than him. They had backgrounds.
Did they like get him into this stuff?
They kind of got him interested in this stuff. It doesn't seem like they ever forced him to do things, but Aaron just kind of...
He trusted them, obviously.
He trusted them because he met them when he was young. And also just, I think, after losing his father and not having very much stability, he just wanted to be a tough guy. Mm-hmm. So he thought hanging around these tough guys would make him a tough guy. So he picks up Otis Wallace and Carlos Ortiz, and they're seen on a security camera picking Odin up just after 2:30 a.m. They're in a rental car, a 2012 Nissan Altima that was rented by Aaron, and they drive to a secluded area in North Attleboro, Massachusetts, which is about 1 mile away from Aaron's family's home. Like Aaron's, you know, his fiance and his daughter are just back at home in their little mansion about a mile away. Mm-hmm. At some point on this car ride, Odin must have known that something was going on because he texted his sister three text messages. The first one said, "Do you know who I'm with?" The next one said, "NFL." And the next one said, "Just so you know."
Creepy.
"Do you know who I'm with?" "NFL. Just so you know." Like he knew something was going to happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Odin was found the next morning. He was shot 6 times, once in the right forearm, once in the right flank, 2 in the back, and 2 in the chest.
No.
Yeah. So sad. So that happened June 16th into June 17th. And once this body was found, there was some suspicion that Aaron was involved, but nothing official ever came out. And he spoke with the owner of the Patriots, Robert Kraft, and Robert Kraft called him in for like a private meeting and was basically like, "Do you have anything to do with this? What's going on? People are saying that you're doing this." And Aaron assures Robert Kraft, "No, I have nothing to do with this. You know, I was at a club at this time. When all the information comes out, you'll see it wasn't me. I didn't do it." After this meeting, Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick, the owner and the coach, they decided that if Aaron was arrested for this charge, he would immediately be dropped from the team. So on June 26, 2013, Aaron was arrested and charged with first-degree murder, and he was officially released from the Patriots within 90 minutes.
Jeez.
Yeah. There was
finally, he's getting some consequences to his actions.
Something's happening. So, yeah, within 90 minutes, there was a press conference that Aaron is no longer on the team. He went through this whole case, and it's actually really crazy because there is so much circumstantial evidence. There's so much evidence that ties Aaron to to the scene, to the place where he was killed. And it's like he wasn't even, he didn't even think about it. He didn't, I don't think he even really put much thought into what he was doing, because listen to this list of everything that was found, or all of the ways that they were able to tie Aaron to this murder. First, the car was caught on video all throughout town. There was videos of him pulling up to Aaron Lloyd's house, or of Odin Lloyd getting into the car. All kinds of video of where they were driving to.
Did it show like Aaron physically?
You could see. So the way that they know that Aaron was in this car is because there was also a video at the gas station that they stopped at before they picked up Odin Lloyd. And you can see all three of the guys, Aaron, Otis Wallace, and Carlos Ortiz. You see them all getting out of the car. They're getting gas. They all go into the gas station. You can see what they're wearing. And at this gas station, you see Aaron buy a pack of Black and Milds and a pack of Blue Bubblicious gum. And then they get back in the car and they drive off. There's like I said, video of them pulling up and picking up Odin getting in the car. There's videos.
Odin or Otis?
Odin is the guy that died. Otis is one of the men that helped.
Okay.
That was with Aaron. I'm sorry. I'll start calling him Wallace. To make it less confusing. So, along with all these videos, there's cell phone pings. You basically, they're able to track everywhere.
Yeah.
With cell phone pings. Like, pro tip, if you're ever going to kill somebody, leave your cell phone at home.
You're supposed to save that for the end.
There was a shoe print left at the scene matching Aaron's Retro 11 Air Jordans in his size. The rental car was in his name. And when they spoke to the attendant at the car rental place, she actually testified on the stand, too, that when he returned the car, he offered her a piece of Bubblicious gum.
What?
Of Blue Bubblicious gum. There were shell casings found both in the car and in the dumpster by the car rental place. It's just, he like just literally, there was also a blunt wrapped with a Black and Mild with Aaron's DNA on it that was also left at the scene.
Yeah, so he's not hiding anything.
He literally did nothing to try to hide that he did this.
Right.
It's absolutely crazy. So they had all of this circumstantial evidence tying to the fact that Aaron Wallace and Carlos Ortiz were all at the scene. This was enough to get Aaron indicted for the murder of Odin Lloyd. He was indicted on August 22nd, 2013, and he pled not guilty. Throughout this whole case, the prosecutors were really able to paint a really good scene about how Aaron was there and how he, you know, he had anger issues and all of this stuff, but they really weren't able to say why.
Like a motive. Everything there is there except a motive.
There was absolutely no motive. And they were also never able to prove that Aaron was the one who pulled the trigger.
Fishy.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really crazy because obviously there's a connection between Odin Lloyd and Aaron, but they were never able to say that Odin didn't like Aaron. A lot of people said that they got along just fine.
Right.
But the biggest thing for me was the murder weapon. Circumstantial evidence is all fine, but they were able to find shell casings, but they were never able to find the gun. The crazy thing is that there is a video of Aaron's fiance moving what is suspected to be the weapon. So she gets a text from him.
Is this that Shaywana girl?
Her name is Shaiana Jenkins.
Shaiana.
So she gets a text from Aaron saying, "Go in the back of the screen in the movie room. There is a box, just in case you were looking for it." And 1 hour later, She's carrying a big trash, like a big boxy black trash bag. And she's not carrying it like you could carry a normal trash bag. She's like carrying it like it's a big, heavy, boxy thing. So you see her like coming out of the house with it. And when she was questioned about this video, she says that she did carry the box out, but she didn't know what was in the box. She just assumed that it was marijuana.
A giant, huge box of marijuana.
I guess that's what she said. Like, also, like, marijuana is not that heavy.
Like, and, like, you would know if it's marijuana because you would smell it.
Right. Like, how much marijuana has to be in that box for you to have to, like, lug it like that?
Yeah.
But, so she admits that she took whatever this was in this box out of the house and she disposed of it. And all she could say was that she disposed of it in a dumpster.
You just threw all this marijuana in the dumpster.
She shockingly, though, could not remember where the dumpster was located.
Mm. She must have been high.
So they did all that marijuana. So they did lots of searches. Like, they searched ponds and rivers and stuff nearby, and they never found it. Despite the fact that they couldn't come up with a motive or find the weapon, Aaron was found guilty on April 15th, 2015 of murder in the first degree. And Massachusetts automatically gives life without the possibility of parole.
Wow.
Absolutely crazy. So I had said before that double homicide in that car that we would come back to it.
Yep.
So when they were doing all of the search warrants for Odin Lloyd's murder case, they actually searched Tanya Singleton's house, which was Aaron's cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that the reason they were able to search her house is because Otis Wallace actually lived with her.
He still lived with her after all this time?
I would assume that he still lived with her. I know he did at one point, and I would assume that's the only reason they could find
him. Able to?
Yeah, because they were trying. Originally, they tried to. They charged Otis Wallace and Carlos Ortiz, and they were going to give them, like, you know, we'll let you off if you give up Aaron, and they never did that. But I assume that that's the reason that they were searching Tanya's home. And in the garage, they found a silver 4Runner, which is the kind of car that was reported to be involved in the shooting back in 2012.
Oh, yeah.
So they just kind of decided, like, hey, if the shoe fits, let's charge Aaron with this murder, too. So this is when they really got Aaron Alexander Bradley on the stand, who was supposedly with him the night at that club, who Aaron supposedly had shot in Miami,
mm-hmm.
and all of this stuff. And for this case, for the murder of, Daniel De Abreu and Sofia Furtado, Aaron hired Jose Baez to defend him. And Jose Baez is an insanely good lawyer. He actually is the lawyer who got Casey Anthony off.
What?
And he's just known for being, like, a really, really good.
So I hate him.
You know, I can see, I mean, yes, I actually, to be honest, don't know a ton about the Casey Anthony case, but that's, like, one of the cases he's most famous for. But Jose Baez was really quickly able to prove that they didn't have enough evidence, they didn't have a motive. And Aaron ended up being acquitted of this charge.
Oh, wow.
Which, honestly, I think that... I think that was a really weird noise that just came from my throat. I honestly don't think that Aaron did that murder. I think that it was just, like, easy. I don't really know how to explain why that 4Runner would be in Tanya's garage. But... there's, like, I don't think that Aaron would have killed a person over a spilled drink. That's kind of crazy, especially, like, if there's other people there to tie you to the crime. And they also showed that Aaron was only in that club for 9 minutes. And he took pictures with fans and stuff. There was so much stuff that kind of proved him to get away from that. And that's why I didn't get too much into that murder, because I think that I mean, it did play it was a big deal in Aaron's kind of timeline, but since he didn't get charged with it, I really don't think it's that important to where Aaron ends up after all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So after he was acquitted of this that murder case, he decided that he wanted to appeal the conviction of murder, of the murder of Odin Lloyd, and this time he wanted to keep Jose Baez as his attorney.
Mm-hmm.
After the acquittal, everybody says that Aaron was in really high spirits because he really thinks that Jose Baez was going to help him get this appeal and help him get off. And I really do. Jose Baez is a really good attorney, and I honestly think that if this appeal would have been able to, like, come to fruition, that Jose Baez probably could have gotten Aaron off on that murder, because, like I said, there was no motive and there was no weapon, and I think Jose Baez would have been able to kind of prove Aaron's innocence pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Aaron was found dead in his cell on April 19th, 2017 at 3:05 a.m.
What?
He had hung himself with bed sheets from the window. He had been smoking K2 within 30 hours of the death. And he did a lot of stuff to make sure that nobody was able to save him on time. Like, he put shampoo all over the floor. He shoved cardboard, like wedged cardboard under the door so it was hard to open the doors. He did a lot to make sure that nobody could save him. And he wrote letters. He wrote one letter to Jose Baez, thanking him for all that he did. He wrote one letter to his daughter, and he wrote one letter to his fiance.
What?
And at the end of his letter to his fiance, he said, "You're rich." The reason he wrote this is, and what's rumored to be the reason that he killed himself, is because he had learned that if you are charged with murder and you have started an appeal and then you die before that appeal ends, that they'll automatically reverse your charge. It's called abatement. So what they think is that he killed himself after he had started his appeal so that they would take that murder charge away, so that the Patriots would have to pay Cheyenne Jenkins, like, I think it was $10 million.
What?
That would have been owed. But everybody, when this happened, people were pissed. So Massachusetts actually changed the law.
Because of him?
Yeah, this is the case that made Massachusetts change their abatement law. And they actually, like, decided, even though they... So first they did the abatement and they cleared Aaron's name. But then they changed the law and the judge was like, retroactively, I'm going to keep Aaron charged for murder.
Oh my gosh.
So he still is considered to be guilty of Odin Lloyd's murder.
Why did he kill himself if he wasn't guilty, though?
Well, see, now we'll get into a lot of other things, which are also reasons that I think maybe Aaron didn't really... I don't really think Aaron was a killer. So there are a couple reasons for all of this madness. One of them, a lot of rumors started to come out about Aaron potentially being gay. If you watch the documentary that's on Netflix called Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez, there's actually quite a few people that say that Aaron talked to him about being gay. There's one man who played high school football with Aaron who says that they had a sexual relationship. And there's, like, a lot of newscasts and stuff about his sexual identity and his frustrations in that. It made him really angry because his father was really homophobic. So that made him kind of homophobic, and he really struggled with that identity. If you listen to a lot of podcasts about Aaron Hernandez, they'll talk about this sexual identity stuff all throughout their podcasts. But I chose not to do that because Aaron never officially came out himself that he was gay.
Yeah.
And I just don't, I mean, I'll bring it up now as, like, a small potential reason why he may have had some mental health issues, but I don't think it's fair to be, first of all, I don't think it's fair to be talking about his sexuality too much when he didn't have the opportunity to come out as by himself.
Right.
And also, I don't want to, like, vilify, or I don't want to make it seem that just because somebody is gay means they have the potential to do things like this. Like, right. Your sexual identity. That's... It certainly can cause lots of mental health issues, which can lead to things like this, but I don't think it was a big enough issue.
I agree.
There was also his childhood abuse, both his dad who abused him, and he was also, his brother confirmed that he was sexually assaulted by a man in their neighborhood. But the biggest issue...
Were both of them or just his brother?
No, just Aaron. Just Aaron was sexually assaulted. The biggest issue, though, is what's called CTE, which is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is caused by repeated head trauma. So, like, it's something that's really common in football players because they get concussion after concussion after concussion. Mm-hmm. Research shows that CTE can cause poor judgment, lack of impulse control, aggression and anger, paranoia, emotional volatility. I know words. rage behaviors, and many more issues, which pretty much all of these things are super apparent in his life from high school all the way through his NFL career.
Yeah.
And so after he died, they did a lot of research on his brain, and he had pretty much the worst case of CTE than anybody had ever seen somebody his age.
So is it also possible that he, like, was high on stuff when this happened, and maybe he just... He just didn't understand what he was doing or didn't see the...
Yeah, so there's, like, tons of theories, which is what I wanted to talk about next, is obviously Aaron was at the scene when Odin Lloyd was murdered.
Right.
Like, it's very obvious that he was there, but, like, why was he there? How did he get there? Did he actually pull the trigger? I think that because of his CTE... and his mental health issues, it caused him to have a really strong desire to be a tough guy. And he was really irrational and he was really angry. And so he wanted to hang out with guys that he could do these tougher things with. And I think that maybe, I don't really know if he was guilty of pulling the trigger and killing Odin Lloyd, but he certainly was guilty of hanging out with some rough people and putting himself in situations that he shouldn't have been in because his judgment was very poor.
Right.
I'm not saying that I don't think that he should be in trouble. He definitely should have gotten in trouble for being involved in the murder of Odin Lloyd.
You're just not certain that he's the one that did it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I believe that he's the one that pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
There are videos of him in his home with a gun that was used. But maybe he was hiding it for Wallace or Ortiz after they did it.
Right.
I don't really know. I don't really know. What do you think?
I don't know.
It's
a tough one.
Yeah. See, like, I was like, when I
feel like he, I feel like the CTE stuff you're talking about definitely can give evidence that he was capable of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, I don't see a motive either. I don't see actual proof that he did it, but there's definite proof that he was involved.
Right. So, like, there's also a lot of speculation about why Aaron would want to kill Odin. For example, like, maybe Odin found out that he was gay, that Aaron was gay, and he didn't want anybody to know that. Or maybe Odin...
drugs or something.
Maybe it was about drugs, but everybody says that Odin Lloyd was... you know, wasn't involved in stuff like that.
Oh.
But maybe he knew that, maybe he had known about the
other murder.
The other murder, and he was gonna.
Right, especially if the forerunner was found.
Yeah.
At his house.
It's crazy. I do think that he definitely deserved jail time. As, like, I think all three of these men deserve jail time. But I don't think that it's crazy to think that Otis Wallace or Carlos Ortiz could have been the people that pulled the trigger. And it really shocks me that that was never really considered.
Yeah.
Especially considering that these are two men that have rough backgrounds. They're in drugs.
They all should have
been crime,
looked at equally.
And yeah, but they're both involved in drug crimes, gun crimes, all kinds of things. They have records. And Aaron is almost squeaky clean. He had done some things, but there's nothing on his record because he got away with all of it.
Right.
So it's really shocking to me that these other two were never actually considered as the real gunmen.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a really high potential that maybe they were. I don't know what they were charged with or how their cases ended up. I should have really looked into that.
Maybe we can do an update on our next episode.
We can do an update. I'm sure they're still around, maybe. But yeah, this is a crazy case. I would love to hear everybody else's opinions, folks. We will post on the Instagram some pictures. And it would be really neat if you would comment what you think happened.
We will. Yeah, we'll try to... We will post some sources in the description of the episode.
Yes.
And yeah, constructive criticism is always welcome.
Yeah, if you have any constructive criticism, if you have any comments, questions, concerns, or
corrections.
Or case suggestions, you can email us at fraternalfilespodcast@gmail.com. And our Instagram is at fraternalfiles. We are really excited to be doing this. Please keep in mind that we are just beginning, we are just learning, and we may have made some mistakes, but we hope you'll stick around with us. We'll hope you will stick around with us and watch us get better and hear some more stories. And yeah.
You have to listen to the next episode because it's mine.
Yes. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Bye. Love you.